I'm gonna write the timestamp down as the moment where Aaron got scared of all the Swifties and refused
scared.
To answer a question.
No, got timber.
No, I did not. Timber. No, I did
got
not.
Got shooketh. It's okay. It's
no,
okay.
No, I'm not. You will see. You will see. I
will Ain't
not.
Scared is a bumper sticker you would never be able to have on your
that
car.
That is not going true, forward. Knox. I don't care. They told me to F off and that they hope listen, I get cancer. Listen, I'm not afraid of them anymore.
Hello and welcome to number 553 of the podcast. I'm your host, Knox McCoy.
And I'm your other host, Jamie Golden.
The podcast is a show dedicated to delightful idiocy, and we're committed to educating you on things entertained but do not matter.
To find out more about these poetically tortured pursuits, check us out at knoxandjamie.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Podcast, and we're on Twitter at Podcast Pod.
Thanks for joining us this week as we are going to be deep diving Taylor Swift's newest album.
But before we do that, you guys, it's commencement season. Whether it's high school or college, medical school, or the phoning it in 5-year-olds graduating from kindergarten, it's a time to celebrate. And we often celebrate folks with gifts. And in our free newsletter, Note for the Audio, we have created a guide for what to buy your favorite graduate this season. And we picked our favorite items, but listeners also shared their 11 best ideas that they continue to use years after the fact of when they got them. And just in case you're thinking of going off script for the gift giving, because I know some of you are, you're like, oh, I have a better idea. Please enjoy in this guide a cap and gown full of bad ideas people in our listeners' lives thought were good ideas, but they were wrong. Snag our graduation guide as well as see the other chaotic gifts our listeners have endured at knoxandjamie.com/grad. The link is in the show notes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, Jamie, we are going to talk about Tortured Poets Department. In an acknowledgement of strengths and weaknesses, I'm not probably the best co-pilot for this conversation. So we are going to bring in Erin, who not only does she know about Taylor Swift and have a take on it, she's also fully processed the O.J. Simpson death. And we're not going to ask her to process that out loud with us here.
Thank you.
We just want everybody to know
she does
think about it now.
I do want to say we posted a reel of that conversation on Instagram, and that is how someone in our followers found out that O.J. Simpson
I was
died.
Not alone.
No.
Let's alone. Just yeah. be frank. I was not alone.
It's fair. But Erin is going to be, I'm going to step back a little bit and kind of guide the conversation. Erin's going to be a much more informed, kind of like our Kate Middleton conversation, I feel like. You two, Jamie and Erin, are much more.
Yeah, if everyone could refrain Taylor, from telling
please,
me
Taylor,
that.
Taylor, please stay healthy.
F up please stay and, healthy.
We're going for better
telling
vibes.
Telling me that they wish I would get cancer, that would be great, ideally.
Yeah.
That would
yeah.
be great.
So Erin's going to fill in before we get to maybe the specifics of the actual album. Let's kind of talk more in broad terms, and maybe we can just start by like an opening thought on the album itself. Jamie, would you like to kick us off?
Okay, so for context for the listener, I would call myself a casual Swiftie as opposed to like a Swiftie stan. Because I joined the Swiftdom in 2012 with Red, which is almost a perfect album. It's my top tier along with 1989 and Folklore.
I do want to call attention to, I want to be the voice of the resistance because your relationship with Taylor Swift is very complicated, as people will probably...
Listen, I did have a listener at BFOTS because I made a tweet that weirdly, not almost to my dismay, got some traction.
Yeah.
And I said, because I said somebody had asked me in a text, said, what are you working on today, Friday? And I said, well, I'm listening to 31 songs of a billionaire who won't go to therapy. And that took off. And one of the BFOTS replied and said, if you hate her, just say it.
Right, right.
And I was like, girl, wait, come, because I do think there is an energy that you're not allowed to be critical of Taylor Swift if you're in the cult. So they want you all in or they don't want you involved at all. So I think that's what frustrates people about me, because they're like, you act like you're a faux Swiftie.
I think that is certainly a spin. I think if I was creating a different argument, I would say you're not brave enough to say you don't like her.
Do I like Taylor Swift the person? Absolutely not.
We're not talking about the person.
Yeah. But the musician, so let's talk about it. I was pumped about this album.
Yeah.
Hat tip to Brian Licious on TikTok, who does call it TTPTSD, which does feel right. But we will call it TTPD. It's her 11th studio album. She has re-recorded 4 of the 6 albums that she does not own. Her last album, Midnights, was actually the first album in 7. Where I had more skips than plays. So TTPD, it made me think with the black and white of it all, the poetry part of it all, that we were going back to an Aaron Dessner Folklore Evermore vibe, which really excited me because I really love both those albums. But there were some things that stuck out to me, but I was like, oh, I don't know about this. And then I woke up and they were like, no, there's 31 songs. I was like, I don't have time for this today, Taylor. I do not have time for this.
She is really flooding the zone with content. I respect, but also I'm overwhelmed a little bit. So, Jamie, do you feel prepared to like say maybe in the tier of like where you're enjoying this? Of like, is this upper echelon of like your enjoyment with albums, mid, lower?
No, this should be down here with Debut. She'd be down here.
She's in the gutter with Fearless.
Listen, Fearless is not a bad album, but like I don't really listen to the country because that's not my journey. Sure. But of all the other albums that I've loved, this is for sure in the last place. Listen, I literally took I made my own playlist and renamed it Auditing Poetry 101 and made my own tortured poets album of the songs I liked, and that is now a happy place for me. That's the album I wish she would have made. So I'm very happy with that album. It's fantastic, but it is missing 21 songs. So
that's a helpful way to go about it. Aaron, you don't have to like you can, as a way like of getting into your opening thoughts, do you want to talk about like where you're slotting this in terms of like tiers?
Yeah. So I think for me, I was actually talking to David Gate about this in DMs this weekend. But for me, it's not that I don't love good bits of Evermore and Folklore. Taylor is for me always going to be her best when she's pure pop. So that's where this album is not necessarily connecting for me personally. Walla and I actually had a conversation, and she explained that there's this storyline theory that it starts off like she's actually telling a story throughout the entire album. And I respect that, but that's not for me. Like I'm not going to listen. I'm not ever going to sit and it's like watching Passion of the Christ. I'm never going to do that again. Okay. Yeah. Like I'm never going to sit and listen to that album from beginning to end again. So while I respect that, that's not for me. So I think for me, there are songs I really like, but it's the same thing with Jamie. It's a pick and choose, which is similar to Evermore and Folklore for me, and Midnights, honestly. So I think for me, one, let me just say, thank God this album did not exist when I was in high school, because I would have been insufferable. Like the persecution of love, specifically in Down Bad and But Daddy, I Love Him. I would have laughed.
Down Bad cried at
the
gym.
Oh my gosh. Listen, you could have alternately titled this album Teenage Petulance and it would have absolutely worked. I think she needs an editor. I love her. But I think 31 songs is absurd. And like, just get an editor, babe. I love it. But get an editor. And I think mainly for me, like, I'm fascinated by the message of the album, which what I'm getting is so much like the burden of fame, right? Through the lens of these two, what seems like two failed relationships. So when I hear a song like I Can Do It with a Broken Heart, which for me was an instant classic, like I immediately was like, this is my favorite song on the album. It's like emotionally devastating and it's causing everyone to have very complicated feelings about their heiress experience. But it's like really freaking fun to sing along to, which is her whole point at the end of the song, right? Like no one can do this better than she can. No one can actually put you in these moral, artistically compromising situations. Like, do I feel good about like bebopping along to her mental breakdown that I apparently helped cause? Like, no, but am I doing it? Yeah, I am.
Well, and she shouldn't have sold it to you.
That's my thing. And she's making money off of it. You're exactly right. Yeah. That's 100% true. Like there's this cognitive dissonance that's not unlike being a feminist and knowing every word to like B words ain't S words. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel good about it, but I'm also like, and I know that's a privileged perspective, like 4,000%. But, and I think Taylor is truly unmatched because even if you can't stand her, you're still talking about her. Like that line from Who's Afraid of Little Old Me, put narcotics into all my songs. That's why you're still singing along. And so I think this whole album, it's not that I think she's right or that her perspective is the correct one, but it's interesting to maybe peel back the curtain and get her thoughts on what it's like to experience life from her vantage point. So I guess mainly I'm interested in the album from a lyrical point of view as opposed to the musicality of it. Like I'm not connecting with the music part of it, but the lyrics and the poetry are interesting.
That's really interesting because I felt like the best way for me to come into this is, you know, like Jason and I are recapping Survivor on the Overachievers, like the supporter feed, right? And his unique perspective is he's only like watched like the last like 4 or 5 seasons. Mm-hmm. I've watched the previous 40. So we have very different points of view when it comes to this.
Yeah.
So I kind of felt like that coming to this, like, I don't really know too much about the other stuff. Well, right. So I'm just going off what I got here.
Well,
right.
Let me pause you there because I do think you do have experience in a way that Aaron and I do not, because you have a long history of writing poetry.
That's true.
Okay. Well, long is doing a lot of work there.
You're
it's a stunted poet. And horrific history, but it does exist. Jamie, that's true.
Can we share any this week on the Instagram feed?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Dang it. You had to be at a live show.
You had to be at a live show to see it.
Sorry. Sorry.
Listen,
everyone.
I didn't want to like do the thing and like talk about the book and like get millions of people to buy it. But there is a poem at the end, you know, it's called Always and Never. And it's just, I just don't want to. Is it new poetry? It's new. It's fresh poetry, Aaron.
Fresh
that's why. Thank you.
Poetry. Yeah.
It's very untortured. It's untortured for sure. But there's that like musically, I don't feel like I'm equipped to discuss or like delineate what I do and don't like. And I don't really even think that's my lane anyway with any kind of music. Lyrically though, I'm fascinated with this. And it felt like just there was an aspect of this album, because I found when I would go and read the lyrics first and then listen, it helped me understand way better, as opposed to listening and then trying to understand the lyrics after. But there's a part of it that felt like, it felt very teenage, right? And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a very like complimentary way, because I don't know who said this, someone much smarter than I and probably many more people said, like, there's this idea that the age you are when you become famous is who you become, like who you stay as an artist for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And I feel like you can see that with Taylor a little bit. And I don't know if she's referencing that intentionally or unintentionally, but there's a lot of the lyrics, a lot of the songs feel like almost like that explosion of feelings or awareness that you have after you've been dumped or after you've broken up with someone. And you're like simultaneously regretting all of your vulnerabilities that you showed in that relationship, but at the same time, lamenting the loss of this thing that at one point did validate being vulnerable with this person. So it's this really messy stew of like, I hate you, I love you, I miss you, like you're a coward, like all this stuff that I felt like was contradictory, but in an intentional, almost poetic way.
It's so interesting that you say that, because we were literally talking about that before we started recording, that she references the fact that she is stunted often, like in interviews and in lyrics. And she talks about it all the time.
And in Miss Americana, the doc, she quotes you directly. She says that same quote of that you're stunted. And she goes, that is true for me. Like, and she says it. That is true for me. She had said in an interview once that as a 30-year-old that she had never been to therapy because she was like, I'm pretty sane. And which that's your first line. You need to go to therapy if you're like, I'm pretty sane. And she said, I talked to my mom and that's enough. And I thought to myself, I was like, you mean the mom that lives in the house you bought for her and drives a car you bought for her and rides in a PJ that you bought for her? Like that mom, that's your therapist. That's not healthy. Like that's not, and especially
be like Vinny going to Turtle and Entourage and asking for therapy. It's like, hey, you're just not going to get it, my man.
And it's not that her mom's not a lovely person, and it's not that her mom doesn't love her, but like
her mom did want Kim Kardashian dead, according to one of the lyrics in the song.
But also, like, I mean, you even point out in one of the lyrics of the song, like these people only raise you to cage you. Like you're saying. Your therapist is your jailer? Like, that's what you're essentially saying here. Like, that's not, no professional counselor would say that that's a healthy relationship. Like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like most therapy revolves around moms and dads. Yeah. So to like talk to a mom about that.
Can't talk to the subject about it.
Yeah. But I really do. I'm really impressed with the lyricality. I think this is a very literary album to me.
Oh, it is 100%.
And I think the more I thought about it, the more I thought she is credentialed as a musician. I don't, I'll speak for me. I've never really respected her as a writer, like an author, a poet, if you will. But there, some of her lines, sometimes I do feel like she feels the need to gild the lily a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think that's music, right? But at the same time, like, I think that's why she's such a different animal as an artist for a variety of reasons, but primarily, I think so much of music is untethered to any kind of meaning right now. It's just like sounds and words, and it's not really attached to an idea. But I think Taylor Swift is like she's like the urtext, the context, and the subtext all at the same time. So you know it's about her, and she's played into that. But at the same time, I think there's something really there's a Shakespearean, Dickinsonian sense of it of like it's very meta and it's very personal. But it's also not private. So there's that like discord again where it's like, whoa, this is interesting because she's chosen to do this thing about herself, but she's also kind of being really revelatory in a way. Not really any other artists of her stature are right now.
I know this album is 10,663 words. I copied and pasted all the lyrics into Google.
Dang.
Doc. That is so,
that's a lot of words.
That's
a lot of words.
That's a lot of words.
I know, right? This episode is brought to you by our amazing sponsor, Olive & June. As a longtime user of Olive & June and as the chairman and co-founder of the We Don't Wear Open Toe Shoes If Our Feet Are Not Presentable Club, I don't think we talk enough about their pedi system. Listen to me. Now, the weather is getting warmer. I know you're going to be tempted to go out without just like even acknowledging your winter feet. Maybe need to just have a little buff. You know what I mean? And I'm going to need you to stop right now and order a pedi system immediately. Like their Manny system, Olive & June's pedi system comes with everything you need to get those feet ready and presentable without the hassle of going to a salon, including the Posey, which is this brilliant footstool that opens up and you can use it to store everything in. It also comes with a smoothing foot file and hydrating foot serum, which are both mandatory if you ever plan to be around me with your toes on display. I just love how generous they are. And they just sent us the Quick Dry Spring Collection and the Calazal Gorgina. They truly have the best shades, whether you like bright colors, pastels, or neutrals. The Kitten Quick Dry is my go-to neutral shade, but if I'm in the mood for something fun, I've been reaching for Flamingo, which is this bright coral pink shade that is just perfect for spring. Just like their regular polishes, the Quick Dry are super long-lasting, and the best part is they dry in just about a minute. I'm as obsessed with the Quick Dry for doing my pedicures as I am with the Tab press-ons for my manis because they are so quick and easy and give the best results every single time. Visit oliveandjune.com/podcast for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/podcast for 20% off your first system. So the weather's getting warmer and I'm so excited to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to dresses and tees. I'm so glad that I found Quince because not only can I update my wardrobe for the long haul, but I can do it without spending a fortune. Even Penthouse Jamie, she's trying to save her cash dollars in this economy. But y'all know how I value quality and I want to find timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. Now, Quince has just restocked their $40 linen wide leg pant, which I am super bummed to try. They have such a nice drape to them and they're 100% linen, which means they'll be super breathable and I'll feel like I'm wearing no pants at all, which is my preference. I'm also loving the look of the organic cotton gauze roll sleeve shirt, which is also $40. Guys, true story. Like They have great pieces. I am obsessed with the cardigan I have and the sunglasses I have. The Leon sunglasses are dope. Their prices truly cannot be beat. All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands because they partner directly with top factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics. They cut out the cost of the middleman and pass that savings on to us. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/pop for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/pop to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/pop. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big, small ones, whether it's the stress that comes with planning a big event, having to redo the electrical in your entire house unexpectedly, or simply having to go on a picnic lunch when you'd rather be home pantless watching your favorite show. Stress is truly a universal experience that, if left unchecked, can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space where you can get things off your chest and work through anything that's weighing you down, big or small. I've truly noticed such a difference in my stress level since I started therapy years ago. Making it a priority and a consistent part of my routine has allowed me to relieve my stress in a very safe environment instead of bottling it all. As someone who has a hard time sitting in my feelings, it's given me the habit of reflection so I can identify and deal with stressors early on before they overwhelm me. BetterHelp is a convenient, flexible, and entirely online, making it easy to stay consistent. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/popcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/popcastpod. This episode is brought to you by Pear Eyewear. I just love a reason to celebrate a niche pop culture themed holiday, don't you? Whether it's April 25th, known as the perfect date, when all you need is a light jacket. If you know, you know, or better yet, May the 4th. I'll gladly go all in. I was trying to think of a fun way to decorate R2-D2 in honor of this most holy day of the year. And then I found out that Pear Eyewear just launched a Star Wars themed collection. Now I think I might have to celebrate by getting some new top frames for me instead, because the Force is just that strong in their newly launched Star Wars collection. You guys, I'm not even joking. These frames are so adorable. And when I saw that they had a Grogu gradient, I could not contain my excitement. They have 21 unique designs that are all perfectly niche in the most delightful way. Their interpretations of familiar Star Wars icons are like fun Easter eggs that you can easily snap onto your favorite glasses whenever you're in the mood for a change. I love that their frames are so affordable at just $25 and that changing them is so easy. Hearing that little snap when you change out your frames, so satisfying. From legendary battles to formidable icons, these epic designs are for true fans, and whether you side with the Rebels, the Dark Side, or the Mandalorian, Pear Eyewear has got you covered. One pair, infinite possibilities. Go to PearEyewear.com and use code POP for 15% off your first pair, and support the show by mentioning that the podcast sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's PearEyewear.com, code POP.
I wanted to get y'all's thoughts on, generally speaking, and I don't, you've been on the record about this before. How do you feel about synth pop? Do you like it or do you hate it?
Oh, I'm done. I am at
you
my
go with
capacity.
Synth pop.
I am.
Here's the thing. Like, I think I'm, and we Jamie and I talked about this on Thursday. I think when we were reeling from the idea that this could be a Matty Healy
because the album had leaked on Thursday,
and yeah. we were all too unwell, like just spiraling that this might be a Matty Healy album. And we made we were talking about how, like, I'm good with Jack Antonoff Productions at this point. Like,
yeah,
I'm ready for her to maybe try something new. Like, I liked the Jack Antonoff stuff that she did early, like 1989, and then some stuff since then. But like, I like her Aaron Dessner stuff. I like when she plays with different people, because I think he puts too much of an emphasis on the synth stuff. And I want her to try some other stuff.
A friend of the show told her 8-year-old daughter, like her 8-year-old daughter came to her and said, "Hey, I would like to listen to a song on the album." And so she had to be really intentional because a lot of them are not appropriate for her 8-year-old. I know. And so she played the song for her. And her 8-year-old goes, "I've already heard that one." And it was like, "That's right, you have."
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, the mouths of babes.
Is that the most brutal critique?
It does kind of feel like that.
Should take that into account. Yeah.
They kind of bleed into each other. I don't know if that's my ignorance, or I didn't know if that was my ignorance or not. I do feel like there's something to her flooding the zone. I don't mean this as a critique of her. This is just the only other comp I could come up with. There's an aspect of her that feels a little Drake-y, you know, of like very personal. Also, I'm going to flood you with so much music and songs that like it's hard to get a handle. I can't hear a song and be like, that's from that album. I know that.
Oh my gosh.
For sure.
And listen, isn't it a coincidence that today Drake dropped a diss track and called Taylor Swift the biggest gangster in music?
Interesting.
Calm down.
Before we go superlatives, let me ask a question of people who are more experted on Taylor than I. Do you feel like this is Taylor Swift's imperial phase? And when I say imperial phase, that's been defined as like, it's the height, like the simultaneous height of creative and commercial powers. Is that this? Did we already hit it? Or are we looking forward to it?
I hope we're looking forward to it. But I do think for me, I would argue, I would make the case that it was Folklore. It was the surprise drop of I've made an album in my bedroom, literally where I didn't have to because I have 8 homes. So I don't know what bedroom it was. But I think because we're in a Taylor cinematic universe, right? And I think if you look at the cinematic universe, you go, oh, Folklore being such a pivot, like from Reputation, from Lover, such a pivot, being like, oh, I can do this. It was her first collaboration with Aaron Dessner from The National. And you were like, oh, this is, she can do, not only can she pivot from country to pop, she can pivot from pop to kind of like folk Americana and do an amazing job. And that, I think, laid, because when you go to the Eras Tour, I think people are always surprised how they feel about the Folklore Evermore sets. They're always surprised about how, like, how much they enjoy them, me included in that. And I think for me, that was what set up the era. I don't think Midnight set up the Eras Tour. I think those two albums, people, and just the pandemic of people like ready to go, but because she had never toured Lover either. And so it was like she had that, to me, the Lover Folklore of it all is really the pinnacle. And I think this is where you're getting into people going, I'm fatigued and it's too much and 31's too much. And, but we get it. We love you. And I see those Swiftie stands being like, I understand that this was for her and it wasn't for us. If you hear any Swiftie stand say that, then that, I think that's your sign that we're maybe coming out of it. And maybe can Rome rise again? Did they historically? I don't know.
Well, Rome endured. Their high point is endured. Who knows?
Got it.
Was it Augustus? I don't know for sure. This does, the fatigue feels real. The commercial power also feels real for me, an outsider right now. Aaron, would you agree or disagree or shift the timeline?
I don't know. I mean, I go back to like, I remember watching Beyonce at Coachella, like Homecoming, and going, this is the best thing I have ever seen her do. And there's just nothing else that can be done. And then, you know, listening to Cowboy Carter and going, well, okay, I watched Lemonade and then it was Homecoming and then it was Cowboy. And so it's just like, I don't ever feel qualified to say like someone's hit their peak. That just doesn't, sure. I don't know. But I do agree with Jamie that we are fatigued and I don't know that that's entirely her fault. I think it's a two-way street.
Yeah.
And there's blame all around.
I'm going to write the timestamp down as the moment where Aaron got scared of all the Swifties and refused
scared.
To answer a question.
No, got cinder.
No, I
she
did not. Cinder. No, I did
got
not.
Got shooketh. It's okay. It's
no,
okay.
No, I'm not. You will see. You will see. I will
Ain't
not.
Scared is a bumper sticker you would never be able to have on your
that
car.
That is not going true, forward. Knox. I don't care. They told me to F off and that they hope listen, I get cancer. Listen, I'm not afraid of them anymore.
I hope the Swiftie stands are less, I would say they're less aggressive than the British royal family stands, but I do not think that's
I
true.
I don't know.
I do not think that's true.
I actually don't know, and I wouldn't want to meet either one of them in a dark alley.
Okay, let's go ahead and go to superlatives. Aaron, I want you to start. Our first superlative we want to give out is the lyric or song or lyrics with the best subtext. What did
this,
you go with?
This is low-hanging fruit, and I'm fine with it because it is for me, I'm having his baby. No, I'm not, but you should see your faces. It made me gasp out loud because I imagined a giant conference room with Taylor Swift at one end and her father and Tree Payne at the other. And she's saying, hey, guess what? Guess what, Emmer Effers? I'm having Maddie Healy's baby.
So good.
And then letting that information hang in the ether for 30 seconds until she corrected it. And just like, I wish I could have been there. I want to know every detail of how that happened. That it, and I could not stop laughing. That is hilarious. I want to know everything about that moment. Was Maddie Healy there? Was he in on it? Was he smoking a cigarette while it happened? I need to know.
It's good.
I need to know the
it's
whole
good.
Thing.
It makes you think of a scene in Baby Mama. But oh like gosh. Maddie Healy is the Dax Shepherd.
Yes.
You know,
100%. 100%.
All right, Jamie, what about you? Lyric, song with best updates.
Well, it's the song that that lyric comes from, which is But Daddy, I Love Him. It is my favorite song. It has been my favorite song. It continued on the ride here to work. It was my favorite song. It's number six on the track. It is the 2024 Taylor Rebellion, right? Please stop telling me what to do. And she's talking to many people. She's talking to the management team. She's talking to her dad, who I learned this year runs Taylor Nation. Did not know that. And that was gross. I don't know. I didn't like it. And of course, her fans. She specifically calls out the Sarahs and the Hannahs and the Wine Moms, who are going to be really upset.
Brutal.
And she calls it white noise, which does feel appropriate. And we've been to the Eras Tour. It is a bar of what? But my subtext of this is I love the song. It's a bop. But it is also remembering it has the best subtext because this is the dumbest thing. This is the most chaotic lyric. Lyrically, it's the most chaotic song because you are such a garbage person for dating Maddie Healy. Like, and look, and you hated that we told you that. And now I see Swifties being like, we should never have gotten involved. No, we should have. Because Maddie Healy, at that point when she was dating him, because she's been like, she's been kind of tangled up with him since 2014. And he's, for those who don't know, Maddie Healy is the Nepo baby, who's the lead singer of the 1975. And he appeared on a podcast at the beginning of the Eras Tour. He appears on a podcast where he, in the episode, they are talking about Ice Spice and what is her ethnic background, which for the record is Dominican and Nigerian. And they start doing Japanese accents and Chinese accents and Korean accents, trying to land on, quote, what is Ice Spice? And then in that same episode, he joked about really loving pornography where Black women are brutalized specifically. So that's a racist person.
Yeah.
And so you're dating a racist person and then you're like, look at your faces. I'm pregnant with this baby. Like, to me, that's just like, and you're yelling at the Hannahs and Sarahs for, quote, b-wording and moaning.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, because they don't, they love you and they've put you on a pedestal. Maybe they shouldn't have put you on a pedestal, but also, yeah, don't date Maddie Healy.
You know, the really interesting thing is really like this song and lyric sequence. That's, we're going to talk about lyric songs that's most likely to stay with us. This was mine. And yeah, part of it's my ignorance of like not knowing who this really is about. I interpreted it more broadly and kind of, obviously it's about critique and criticism, right? There's also, and maybe this is like, you bring your own goggles to every absolutely artistic thing and you interpret it like according to your own goggles. I found this to be very, there's a lot of religious iconography, syntax used. And this is one where, she says, I just learned these people only raised you to cage you, Sarah and Hannah's in their Sunday best. I interpreted that more of a church conflict. And even God saves the most judgmental creeps who say they want what's best for me, sanctimoniously performing soliloquies I'll never see, thinking it could change the beat of my heart when he touches me. There's obviously like a guy at the center of this, but I couldn't help but try to disentangle. I didn't know if there's a commentary on like the Christianity of it all, or if those are just low hanging fruit, like illusions to make. But there was something in that for me of the way people try to take her and like bend her to their will and like to what they interpret her as, because I have seen people already coming out and be like, this is sacrilegious. This is such a terrible album. If you're a Christian, like you can't let your kids listen to it. When I just think it's an album, it's just an album, just like the other ones are albums. Right. I don't know if it's a stance necessarily. But do you think is there anything to that interpreting it with the lens of Christianity?
I think that's so interesting because I think when you are so close, like when you have such a context for Taylor and you are so close to it, it's almost impossible to read anything like that, like what you just said, into her lyrics. Like there's no way for us to have a general interpretation, because we know that, or we are almost positive that this is a song about Maddie Healy. You know sure. what I mean? So it's yeah. like, yes, that is that's an incredible interpretation and fascinating to think about. And it never even occurred to me.
And also probably completely wrong. Right.
No, I don't, but that's part of art, right? Like that's sure. part of music and that's part of interpretation. But like, we're so close to the subject matter. There's almost no way for our brains to work in like general terms or more, even more interesting terms, because we're so like just Jared gobbling Perez Hill. Wow, I just used two really old gossip things. Sorry, I'm old. I'm an old.
No offense, Stretch Jared. Yeah. How's sorry, yeah. Jared. RP going?
I'm sorry, Perez Hilton. But I think like, you know, you're just like, you've gobbled that. I've gobbled that up so much.
Yeah.
That there's no way that I could have ever thought that.
Well, to be fair, you've gobbled it up and it's been served to you on a platter.
Sure.
Here's the all too well. Would you like a 10-minute version?
Yeah.
Where I look in the camera like I'm looking at Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
And I love that you wonder if the song is about John Mayer. I love that I'm going to bring out Taylor Lautner, no one has thought about in a decade, but I'm going to bring him out at the Eras Tour. So there's also that component of like, of course we're thinking about the love you're in. Plus you did explain like in the prologue of this album that this was a frantic, fatalistic time in my life where I made decisions that I didn't really love. And it feels like she is out putting it on the line. But listen, if you like this song for deconstruction, yes, it fits.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
100%. Yeah. Yes.
And I think it's interesting because I feel like that, Jamie, what you're talking about, that knife cuts both ways of like, it can be what hooks you. But then that kind of engagedness with fans is also when you make a questionable decision about love interest, it can be what creates all the vitriol. And I wonder if maybe there's, I don't know, a connection there between how the degree of difference between like religious morality versus like secular morality. Like if you're a legalist in religion, you're probably gonna be a legalist in like cultural critique as well. Mm. And it's almost like you can slide that prism either way and you're still gonna get that.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right, because if you think about context of, right, because we're always thinking about when is the context of this written, this poetry written, and what is the context of the poet writing it. And if you think about for 2023, she did deal with some criticism, like religious criticism about, hey, why are you acting like a witch on stage when you sing Willow? It makes us nervous. I don't like that. Why are you talking about burning witches and you're acting like, but I am one. So she did get criticism for a year. And you had, listen, you had a lot of moms online and dads talking about, well, it's hard because we want our kids to watch the Eras Tour. We want them to go to the theater, but it's got so much explicit stuff in it and we can't control it. So they were pushing back on her saying, you need to be more moral. We want our 8-year-old to listen to this. She's not making music for 8-year-olds, you guys.
Not anymore.
Like, no, not at all.
In terms of lyric song with the best subtext for me, I'm going to go with, you know how to ball. I know Aristotle. Brand new, full throttle. Touch me while your bros play Grand Theft Auto.
Listen. No lyric will live rent-free in my head ever. I cannot. I want to be in heaven, and I want to ask Aristotle. I want to see her explain it to Aristotle.
Yeah.
I want to watch her explain it.
So this is from So High School, right?
That's right.
This is from So
Presumably
High School.
The Travis Kelce song. Is that fair?
100%.
There are more than one. I would argue there are more than one.
Yes,
Travis
there's more than one.
But that's the
this
for sure
definitely
one. Because everybody can picture watching American Pie with Travis Kelce immediately. Like, we were all like, they're on a sectional. They're on an 86.
They're in a basement sectional. They're first on of a, all.
The screen has dropped down and there's a popcorn machine in the back corner. Right.
Him and his bros are playing Grand Theft Auto on the projector. 100%. And he's like, babe, watch me run over these pedestrians. Watch.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it. Doing an impression of his dad. Yeah, I cannot. Like that song. I was like, first of all, I'm so proud of Killa Trav for having a song. I'm so happy for him.
Yeah.
And then it's this one. Get it.
If he didn't get a song on 31 song album,
I know. We were gonna have a
that would tell me that would put some doubts in what I realized last week that they really are together.
Right.
But I think if you want to apply like a very generous interpretive lens, I would say this is, you know, back to that like capturing or that Arrested Development of high school. This feels like one that time in high school where we're also similar in our needs of like, we want to like show who we are. We want to belong to a group also though. And we're also like super subject to trends. But also like really tropish almost in how we separate ourselves. Like I am a jock, so I know how to ball. I'm like a stoic or an academic, so I know Aristotle, you know, or I'm a theater kid or I like do this or whatever. And like it reads almost cringy in a lyric. But if you put it back into that time, that's really how you think about each other and how you think about yourself in high school. Okay, Aaron, lyric or song that'd be better if it belonged to someone else?
Take Fresh Out the Slammer, strip it down to acoustic guitar only, and give it to Patty Griffin.
Yes, because this is probably my, I would say it's in my bottom tier of songs.
I don't like it, I think it belongs to Patty. And but you got to take all of the Jack Antonoff out of it first. So that's my thing.
You got to unplug every instrument, every keyboard, into an outlet,
every MacBook, and take it away. Yeah.
Listen, I really do love synths. I don't know if I used to, but I've come around on them.
Yeah.
But there is it feels like synth obliteration when you get to the end of this, and you're just like, God, make it stop, please. I can't. Yes, I feel like Stranger Things is like in my brain forever now because of this. The lyric I chose, I think it's from I Hate It Here, but it's my friends used to play a game where we'd pick a decade we wish we could live in instead of this. I'd say the 1830s, but without all the racists and getting married off for the highest bid.
Did you not like that? You're not down with that?
Ridiculous.
What's going on?
I withhold judgment because maybe that's a callback to a different album I don't know about.
No, it's not. It's
okay,
not.
Well,
no,
I would say not. I could see Macklemore putting a spin on this. In a cringy, corny way.
Popping tags in 1830s.
Or maybe we sentence Morgan Wallen to do a song with this lyric.
I
don't know that Morgan Wallen has that capability.
I don't know. Maybe he doesn't probably know about the
1830s. You think it's because she really into Bridgerton? Because same girl, same. I do love a Bridgerton vibe, but you do know that Shonda Rhimes added all those people, right? She added them to that castle and that ball. And look, I know that she wrote, she's talking about when she was a kid, but the 2010s were pretty dope. They were great. I would argue the 2010s were great. Also, racism, always a problem. But I also am really into the Shogun, your green light show, Shogun. Uh-huh. I'm like, would I throw out there? I wouldn't have, but I'm also into that.
You think you would, though.
Yeah, but
Jamie,
Japan.
I'm going to tell you right now.
No, listen, 1600, no, it has to be Shogun Japan. It has to be Japan.
Listen,
that's where it has to be.
I do love a world.
I love this. Let's keep going in this vein. I like
where
it.
Where Jamie in English is talking to Torunaga about Matty Healy.
Exactly.
And he's like, I don't understand. And then Lady Mariko's just like, the Anjin has complicated feelings about Matty Healy in the 1975 after a 16-minute monologue.
I think I would be like, bring her to dinner. She's fun. We like to hear what she talks about. I love that. That'd be the only time period that I would be like, maybe, but as long as I can time travel back if I don't like it. Yeah.
It's a good vibe. It's a good vibe. I don't hate it. Oh, let me ask this question. This might be a difficult question to answer. So just broadly, if you had to estimate, what percentage of this is a Joe Alwyn album, a Matty Healy album, and then a, we won't even say Travis Kelce, or just other emotions album?
I think it's 10%. Travis, because I do think there are three songs that you could probably make a case for that are about Alchemy, Albatross, and So High School. I think you could make a case that they're about him and that he's probably referenced in a couple of other songs. I would argue that it's 40 to 50% about Matty Healy.
Okay.
That 15 of those songs, 10 to 15 of those songs are about him because people were like, well, how awful was Joe if he couldn't even get an album? Guys, Joe's been on 5 albums.
Yeah.
She's written beautiful songs to him. I actually think this breakup was not like the Calvin breakup of it all. I think Joe and her were just like, well, it just ended. It had a run and then it ended and it just wasn't ugly and gross.
I mean, I do think that Joe was probably like, I don't want to be Taylor Swift's boyfriend.
100%. But she was like, I think if he ever said that, she was like, okay, and I'll stay here for 6 years.
Yeah.
So I think there was comfort in that and there were parts of it she loved. But I would argue that only I actually only think two or three songs are about Joe. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm sitting here in this moment trying to see you at Japanese court.
It's a lot to process.
Listen, I'm going
to
AI it. I'm
going
to prove it.
I'm
going to AI it and you're going to see the images and you're going to
You would cause so much seppuku committing because we have to defend the honor of the Anjin because of what.
And I'd be like, hang on, I got to get this Google Translate right. Hang on.
I just wanted to take a moment and remind everybody of my theory that Joe Alwyn is actually Joe Burrow because I don't know what Joe Alwyn looks like. And when I think of him, I think of Joe Burrow.
They don't actually look.
How dare you? Don't even do it. Don't even finish that sentence.
They don't look unalike.
No, they do look unalike. You're equating white men.
In the way that white men look alike.
Joe
we can take it.
Hot.
We can, as, on behalf of white men, hot. We can take it.
Joe Alwyn's not unattractive.
He's not hot.
I mean, he's not unattractive.
Wow, that's the meanest. What if Aaron met you and you're like, oh my God, you're not unattractive? Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be the meanest thing you could say to me.
More than I forgot that you existed?
No, that's
You're attractive like a sturdy cardboard box. Yes. You know, that's kind of what it feels
sometimes
like.
Sometimes you need a sturdy cardboard box.
Okay, Aaron, lyric or song most likely to be used in a climactic scene of a prestige TV show?
Obviously, Knox, you share my opinion that The OC is as obviously prestige television.
Yes.
I think you could drop So High School into an episode of The OC and no one would bat an eye.
Oh, that would be good.
I mean, it is a Summer and Seth montage. Perhaps they have just gotten back together. And you have already mentioned, I will never get over the rhyming couplet of Aristotle and Grand Theft Auto. It is art. Magic, beauty, truth, love. It is wonderful.
It is miscongeniality.
It is beauty, grace, right. Miss United States. I love it. The whole thing.
I could see Summer and Seth with Captain Oates over those lyrics.
and Princess Sparkle.
All right, Jamie, what about you? A lyric or song most likely to be used in climactic scene of prestige TV show?
Okay, I'm going to set the scene. It's Succession. It's the final season. It's okay. Shiv and Tom having that fight on the balcony.
Yeah.
And then Shiv has got to pull it together, right? Because now she's learning all the truths about like, oh, our whole family is screwed. And Tom is in control in a way, right? And so suddenly you cue up, I can do it with a broken heart.
Yeah.
Right? And she's tearing up in the corner. Shiv is tearing up in the corner. She's pregnant. She's going to hold her baby. And then the VP of finance calls and she's like, on it, Greg, let's go. And we get this scene where she's just like, heartbroken and just, but she's doing her job. I also want to say about the song, hey Taylor, how you doing? I know you're listening. We get heartbroken by a lover, lost opportunity, friendship breakup, diagnosis, loved one's death. And guess what we all on the planet do? We go to work. Like, we just go to work. You're not special. You're not special. We just go to work. And we just
What if
do
her
it.
Trauma is her work, though? You know?
Oh, wow.
None of y'all want her to go to therapy because you were like, we've never gotten to Evermore. Like you want her unhealthy. You want her mentally unstable.
This makes me think of the movie Flight with Denzel and Beth from Yellowstone, where like Denzel's a great pilot when he's high and like completely drunk and they make him stop and he's not good anymore.
Yeah.
And like he has to like go to a hearing and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's flying a plane. He's like, look, I just got to get high and get drunk and I'm going to land this plane. And he does. And it's like, look, sometimes you don't like the thing I do to do the thing I do, right. But I got to do it.
But that's where the magic is.
Every spring, I'm reminded that there's nothing like a fresh start in spring cleaning. This year, we're taking things one step further with our spring refresh at the McCoy House. Sure, it's been a lot of work to get here, but we're all so excited to settle into our new space. If you've ever moved before, you know there's nothing like the first night in a new room and the difference that soft, breathable, all-new bedding can make. Bowl and Branch's signature sheets are the perfect way to start upgrading your sleep and are designed to feel incredible for all sleepers. They're made with the finest 100% organic cotton and feel incredible on night one, yet they still get softer with every single wash. Bowl and Branch very kindly sent us a code to try out their sheets, and by I mean my wife Ashley, picked the signature hemmed sheet set in cream. We both were so impressed that the quality and softness were so good and so nice. They were super breathable, which I'm also thankful for with summer just around the corner. Sleep better with the softest, most breathable bedding from Bowl and Branch. Go to bowlandbranch.com/podcast for 15% off your first sheet set plus free shipping. That's Bowl and Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D. branch.com/podcast for 15% off. Exclusions apply. See site for details. If you've ever felt overwhelmed while trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, then please take a knee. I'm here to put an end to your search. Songfinch lets you create an original radio quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. Here at the PMG, we want to put them to the test. Could they really create a song about anyone? Well, we'll let you all be the judge.
I am Pickles, the legless horse, but not legless for long. With all my friends by my side, I will find who the culprit was. Who stole my legs? Who stole my legs?
I don't know. I kind of feel like this needs to be our new intro song. You know, artist went above and beyond, and it was so fun to see what he came up with. He even took the time to ask us for more detail because he wanted to make sure he got the essence of pickles correct. It was such a fun process. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free so you and the lucky person you gifted to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/podcast and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, our URL is songfinch.com/podcast. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/podcast.
Shrink the Box is back for a brand new season. This is the podcast where we put our favorite fictional TV characters into therapy. Join me, Ben Bailey-Smith, and our brand new psychotherapist, Namon Metaxas.
Hi, Ben. Yes, this season we're going to be putting the likes of Tommy from Peaky Blinders, Cersei from Game of Thrones on the couch to learn why their behavior creates so much drama.
So make sure you press the follow button to get new episodes as soon as they land on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Shrink the Box is a Sony Music Entertainment original podcast.
The lyric song, I would like to be using a climactic scene of a prestige TV show. I like what you did, Jimmy, because you went backwards. I was going forwards with Succession.
Oh,
where we do like a Kendall reboot, you know? Yes. But we could also go backwards. Any scene with Kendall. And I want to hear the lyric, tell me something awful, like you're a poet trapped inside the body of a finance guy. Because that's Kendall. That's Kendall Roy.
Is literally Kendall. His rap career just hasn't taken off yet. Oh my gosh. That's what it is.
It's good. It's good.
God, that's brilliant.
Okay, Jamie, lyric or song most likely to stay with you?
Listen, she did it. It's that track five. It's that B-word track five. So for those who don't know, track fives on every Taylor Swift album are brutal. She said in Instagram Live once, I didn't realize I was doing this, but as I was making albums, I guess I was just kind of putting a very vulnerable, personal, honest, emotional song as track five. So because you noticed this, I kind of started to put songs there that were really honest and personal. She made those the track fives. So like classic track fives are All Too Well, Delicate, You're On Your Own Kid, Tolerate It. That's about Joe. My Tears Ricochet. This song, So Long London, which is track five. I love this song so much. One, because she does this thing secretly that she writes a line and then she changes it with a comma. It's one of my favorite things she does. She did it in Bejeweled where the line is, they ask, do you have a man? I can still say I don't remember. But is the comma after don't or not?
I don't remember. The meaning. Did you
or
attend
I don't
this?
Remember. Yeah. I love it. I just think lyrically it's her best. It's an Aaron Dessner musical track. So I'm here for it. I just love that song so much. I just think it's one of the best on the album.
Aaron, what about you? The lyric that's going to stay with you.
So for me, it is just the Miss Havisham coming out of the Telltale Heart, quoth the raven, nevermore-ness of Who's Afraid of Little Old Me. Like, let's pull out the Willow Witch balls, because this is like the ghost of Christmas past. Like, she is like a wraith on this song, and I love it so much. Like, the lyrics, the way she's singing, the music, I love this song. It is haunting, and she sounds like a freaking ghost, and I love it. Like, you don't get to tell me about sad. Great line. I was tame. I was gentle till the circus life made me mean. Don't you worry, folks. We took out all her teeth. You wouldn't last an hour in the asylum where they raised me. You caged me and then you called me crazy. I am what I am because you trained me. There's something about this song that feels almost like a Britney homage here. Mm. Like, especially like the circus and asylum references. That there's like
Oh, that's so mean.
Well, no, because Britney, there's like circus. Like, Britney has circus imagery in a lot of her music.
Yeah, no, she has an album called Circus.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, like, I think...
But the asylum. I'm saying the asylum.
Well, I'm saying, like, I mean, I feel like there is, like, a connection point there. And I, like, the child stardom and the whole history thing.
I had... I mentioned mine earlier from But Daddy, I Love Him. I just... Yes. That's such a rich, like, text. I feel like it's a messy text, but it's a good text, but it's, like, really deep. I also... I gravitated towards Guilty of Sin. I found the what if I roll the stone away, they're going to crucify me anyway. What if the way you hold me is actually what's holy? If long suffering propriety is what they want for me, they don't know how you fond of me, so suddenly I choose you and me religiously. I thought there's such a convergence of like what you love versus what's expected of you. And then there's like a moral clarity or fogginess or cloudiness mm-hmm. on what you should be doing. And I found that so fascinating of, and I don't know if this is like, if it got down to it, would she walk away from the thing, the people, to be with the person that she thought like was her person? But I also think it's like that singular idea of like what the person that you are with or your partner or whatever, like that's a religious thing. That's like a sacred thing. I thought that was really, really fascinating. Aaron, what is your best hot take about the album, a song, lyric, anything?
Okay, so I think for me, some of my hesitancy with this album comes down to Taylor being an unreliable narrator in her own life, which I acknowledge like we all are. But for me, this is best expressed through "But Daddy, I Love Him." So she says, "I'll tell you something right now. I'd rather burn my whole life down than listening to one more second of all this being and moaning." Well, that's not true. Like, you didn't. You managed the situation. I mean, it sounds like Maddie may have dropped her or ghosted her, but I can't really tell. But like, it's over. Like you said, you didn't burn your life down and you actually went harder in the paint with Killa Trav. And so would you actually rather burn your life down? I understand the sentiment, but it's an unreliable sentiment. And she's talking about vipers and empaths clothing and judgmental creeps and how everyone took the human cigarette away. Thank you, Nicole Conrad, for that descriptor of Maddie Healy. But, and I want to go like, hey, number one, like Jamie said, he's saying real racist and misogynistic things, and we're just supposed to be okay with that? Like, we don't get to comment on that? You just get a free pass on that? No, you're not above critique, beloved. And number two, you're blaming the media and the judgmental wine moms and the Hannahs and Sarahs and the psychotic Swifties for saying, for like taking, quote, the one thing away you ever wanted. But you've also admitted to cheating in your songs. So is it really fair to say that we're the only thing keeping you from relational happiness? I don't think it is. We're not the only thing forcing you out of a loving partnership. And look, it is her prerogative to tell the story like she wants to tell it. She's the one with the microphone, the stage. And also, like, I get that there's like a patriarchy aspect here. But I think if you're going to consume the product, and by product, I do mean Taylor Incorporated, not just the music, at this level of intensity, you've got to be somewhat aware of the narrative being spun. And it kind of reminds me of the Claire Dederer Monsters of Fans Dilemma, where she's talking about genius. And she says, genius is the name we give our love when we don't want to argue about it, when we want our opinion to become fact, when we want to push our obsession onto the next guy, when we don't want to hold our heroes accountable. And I think there's some truth here. Like, it's her art, right? She gets to tell the tales she wants. But also, as people who partake of that art, who infuse it into our lives, who consume it, quote unquote, we also get to continue the conversation. Like, I go back to that propaganda quote on Faith Adjacent all the time. I don't hate America. I just demand it keep its promises. And I think that absolutely applies here. To critique Taylor is not to hate her. It's to engage with her work. And that's what the conversation between artist and patron is, even though most artists don't want that or have complicated feelings about it. Because also, Taylor's art is not just her music. She's made the public performance of her life part of her art. What she shows us of her life is part of her product. Mm-hmm. And we know she's had moments where she doesn't do that. So it's not like we've forced her into that, okay? She's reminding us it's a two-way street. And I think we need to remind her of that as well. Like, I get it. I hear what you're saying in the prophecy, but it's not entirely on us. We've had our hands slapped and that's fine. But I think she needs to also look inward and accept some personal responsibility. That's my take about this.
Yeah.
Spicy. I like it.
See, yeah. I told you I wasn't afraid. I'm not afraid of you.
Look at you. All right, Jamie, what about you? Your hot take about
Alpha I think Solo? For me, I think this is, she says to us in the prologue of the album that, you know, there's no one to avenge. The chapter is closed. This is it. And it does feel like the reason we got 31 songs is she's like, there are no vault tracks for this later. Like, I'm giving it all to you.
Here
now.
It is all.
Right. I'm giving it all to you now, which is fair. This is her art that she can create and she can do that. I do think that Taylor has far exceeded now past the Eras tour that isn't still in continuation, but she's reached billionaire status. She's dating literally the football player. The NFL freaking loves her, you know? And I think Taylor needs to take, in the same way that you're saying internally she needs to take accountability. I agree with that. I think the next steps for her are to acknowledge that her influence is far beyond her music. The NFL was like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to us. Because when she started going to football games, women, girls started watching football games. And that was big because of her. And she didn't like go, hey guys, the NFL is amazing. Like, she didn't say that, but because she engaged with it and went to, because she could have been dating him without going to the games. That would have been weird. But we don't focus on all the other famous celebrities who date football players. We don't do that as much. But the other thing I think that's important in this is that she is not the underdog that she continues to write that she is. And I think a lot of artists wrestle with this when they can no longer be that, like, I'm, you got a roof for me because I'm fighting all the enemies, the Scooter Braun's, the record industry, the Spotify not paying enough. You know, I'm fighting, this guy touched my butt and I had to go to court and we had to do the whole thing. Like, she, I get it. She's had a lot of underdog moments, but I just don't think she has them anymore. She is isolated from them in many ways now. She doesn't have to engage with the public in any way that she does not want to engage with the public. And all of those are her choices to make. So I think she has to do what other artists of her caliber have done and start to sing about things that are underdogs for their listeners. And so I think Taylor, she was interviewed on Fresh Air and was asked, like, have you ever thought about singing instead of about your internal life and about your life, singing about things that would help girls in other areas of life? And she said, in what way? Like, she had not even considered it. And she said, girls think about girlhood. They're not thinking about other things. Now, do I think that's true of like a 12-year-old? Yeah. But they're going to have to think about things very quickly. Like that 12 to 14, 14 to 18, 18 to 25. Like, it's coming for them. And I just think she has an opportunity.
That's a difficult balance to strike, because I think the second you start creating art with, I don't want to say agenda because that feels like a loaded word, but like, you edge close to faith-based movies of like, I'm creating this art so that you will do and think a thing. Art shouldn't transcend morality, but art should just be art, and we can't apply like our expectations or our ethics or morality onto it. That doesn't mean like you can make sketchy stuff, obviously, but I think it once you start doing that with a point of view and an agenda, it's something different than art, and that's okay too. Right. It's just a very different thing altogether.
No, and you're right. And I'm not saying do it with an agenda of like, I'm going to educate you on racism now. I'm saying do it in a way like Tyler Childers in Your Love. The song is not, has an agenda, but the video did. The video did have an agenda. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. And I like that there are ways to do that in layered, nuanced, quiet ways where you can say the world is bigger than the billionaire with the private jet who sometimes doesn't get to date the tattooed weasel she wanted to date. You know, I just think there is a way to do it. And artists have been doing it forever. Whitney did it. Jana did it. Like, there are artists who've been able to talk about more complex issues without it feeling like this is my, like Sarah Bareilles has done it.
And that's where I think if that's her interest, cool. If it's not also cool, I don't want to hold artists responsible for, did you speak on this? What's your stance on this? I just want them to make the thing. And if they want to be like a Tyler Childers, if they want to be like a Sarah Bareilles or whatever, cool. If not, I'm not going to ding you points for not doing that.
And I just think that's where we're different. I always go back to the Bono of it all when he said once, he was like, celebrity is currency and you have to spend it wisely. And it can't be spent only on your art. And I think for me, that is what I'm looking for. Sometimes when you have I think no one is doing this great at that level because it's such a high level. But I just do think this is an opportunity for you, especially when your fan base is built on the backs of people who are really experiencing just horrific season. I'm not even saying you have to write a song about it.
That's the delineation. Like, your point about Bono, like celebrity being the currency as opposed to art being the currency.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think that could be like where you make the differentiation maybe.
My best hot take about this was, I think Charlie Puth should be a beer artist.
Listen, he's a great follow on Instagram and TikTok if people aren't following him. And I'm glad she did it that way instead of having him collab, because I don't think Taylor Swift fans all are going to leave and be like, Post Malone, what's he about?
Yeah.
They're not going to do that. But Post Malone fans will come to Taylor Swift and be like, Posty's here. Yay. And they'll come over here. So that's why I like the Charlie Puth of it all, of her being like, he should be bigger.
Yeah, he should. I also think that Florida 3 exclamation points should be Florida's Empire State of Mind. You know, like, you know how New York has that?
Their state song.
Like all the Marlins games, all the Tampa Bay Bucks games. You got to play this one because like I need to forget. So take me to Florida. I've got some regrets. I'll bury them in Florida. Tell me I'm despicable. Say it's unforgivable. At least the dolls are beautiful. F me up, Florida. Before every like Bucks game. Let's go. Come on.
Like in every rest center when you cross the state line. Just it's just right. Playing that on a loop.
Orlando Magic timeout. Boom. Hit me with Florida exclamation points. Okay. Any last thoughts before we wrap up our conversation on Torture Poets Department?
Reputation. Reputation.
Give us Rep TV.
Give me Rep TV.
We want it. Give us the gold tracks. We want it.
We want it so bad.
Is there any crossover here? Are any of the lyrics about Kate Middleton? Or do we not want to cross those streams right now?
I don't think that's a Ghostbuster stream we don't want to cross.
Okay. She is still missing, but let's not talk about
it. Don't, Jamie!
We are already in hot water. We cannot rile the ire of both.
Okay, well, if you have thoughts and opinions on our thoughts and opinions, please let us know, Aaron@knoxandjamie.com. or knoxjamie.com/553. All right, Jamie, you can do some lights. All right, what is your red light this week?
Well, I didn't think I'd talk about Kristen Cavallari so much in 2024. I would not have put that on my bingo card. But we've already talked about her because she is dating a 24-year-old, a Montana boys with a Z, Mark Estes. And good for her. Live your best life in your late 30s, dating a 24-year-old. If you're all consenting, live your best lives. But here's the problem. Kristen has a company called Uncommon James that sells a lot of products, including, quote, clean skincare. Okay. And then she has a podcast called Let's Be Honest, because that's how I always hear it. in an episode recently, she said, she brought on an expert and she said, I want to discuss the sun and sunscreen, which I know is controversial. I don't wear sunscreen. And anytime I do an interview, I get a lot of S word when I admit that I don't. So talk to me about the health benefits of the sun and why we don't actually need sunscreen. Holy moly. And so she's talking to, you might be like, well, who? She was talking to a dermatologist, right? She was talking to Dr. Ryan Monahan. Now, is he a dermatologist? No. Is he a medical doctor? Not exactly. So I looked it up. He's credited in the episode description on the show notes as a non-pharmaceutical approach to all aspects of health. Like that's his take, which I'm okay with that. Listen, I'm okay with a holistic view. I use holistic medicine all the time. But he has a PhD on his site. He says, I have a PhD in Eastern medicine. And then he went to Emperor's College in Santa Monica. That was opened in 1983, which is the year Aaron was born.
That's right.
Okay. And they offer 2 degrees total, like total. And one of them is a PhD and it is in acupuncture.
Look at that.
So he has a doctorate in acupuncture, you guys. And this is what he said. He goes, totally. It's a very controversial topic, which is so funny because it's the sun. Like we've spent literally our whole existence as humans under the sun all day until the last like 100 years or so. And now we're like shut in, spending 93% of our lives indoors. That's really bad for a lot of reasons. The sun is life-giving and nourishing. And then Kristen jumps in and says, I use coconut oil when I'm out in the sun. And then he jumps in and says, you should also eat it because it's good for an anti-inflammatory diet. And that can prevent sunburn. Okay. I have never been so angry about the internet in my whole life. So let's do a quick little fact check. Okay, fact check. Per the American Cancer Society, skin cancer is the most common cancer in America. 1 in 5 Americans will get skin cancer. I have had skin cancer. My dad has an appointment to get skin cancer removed next week. Okay, Indy on our team has had skin cancer and had a chunk of her thigh taken out. All right, she's been very.
Jamie's just crushing HIPAA laws right now. Just crushing them.
She does it on Instagram. Okay, but what about the point that the doctor made about ancestors? I mean, he makes a great point, right? Well, the average age, according to the American Cancer Society, for skin cancer diagnosis is 66. Do you know, Aaron Knox, when in history did we start living past 66? Would you like to guess the year?
1930.
Okay.
Oh, gosh, she seems so confident. I'm a little shook.
I just took it from the album. That's the only reason I chose it.
Okay, I'll say 1830, Taylor Swift's favorite time to live.
That's right. 1946. That is when we started living past 66. So that is why everyone wasn't dying of skin cancer, because they weren't living long enough to get the diagnosis. Okay. The best way to prevent skin cancer, aside from staying indoors, is to wear sunscreen. Now, don't eat it. Hear me clearly. Don't eat your sunscreen. Okay. And also, bonus, the National Institute of Health found that 80% of visible facial aging signs are caused by UV exposure. So it also helps you not age. So look forward to that, Kristen, you old hag. You're going to have that old hag face at 40. Gah, makes me so mad.
Right, I have a question, Jamie. Do you have a PhD from any university?
I did not go to Emperor's in Santa Monica. I've only been, now, to be fair, I have been to Santa Monica to the pier.
Yeah.
So I did ride that carousel there. So yeah. Is that like getting a degree from Basically. Emperor's College?
You are now a doctor in acupuncture as well. Congratulations. That's good.
Okay. What's your red light?
My red light is this Office spinoff. It continues to gain momentum.
I know. Oh,
I thought it would go away. I thought it'd be like one of those things we talked about, but never actually happened. But now they've attached Dong Nol Gleason and
Donal.
No, it's Dong Nol to me. And Sabrina Impacciatore. I hope I got that right.
That was good. That you nailed it.
I guess like the manager from the White Lotus season two. They are signed on. Gray Daniels, who did the American version, was I guess the co-creator. He's involved. It doesn't say to what extent he's involved, but I'm not against reboots, right? Like, I'm okay with that. My stipulation is like, I just need some razzle dazzle, some imagination, you know, some like, yes, and let's make this a little better. And here's like the slug line on what it's going to be. This is from, I think it's from Deadline. The new take on the hit NBC workplace comedy, which starred Steve Carell as the inept branch manager of a Pennsylvania paper company, will be set in a new office with new characters, but will take place in the same universe as the original series. Details on Gleason and Impacciatore's roles have not been released, but they're said to be part of an ensemble cast. That is exactly the same as the original, right?
Are they just
going to like put it in Illinois, not Pennsylvania? Donald Gleason looks just like Jim from The Office.
Makes a lot of sense. But what if he's not Jim? What if he's Michael? What if they're making him Michael?
There's no way. He does not have the comedic chops to pull this off. Just because we can doesn't mean we should. And I don't know that we need like The Office : Poughkeepsie. Like, let's try something else. Let's sell a different product. Let's go in a different direction. I'm begging you, because there's a good spine here, but just to do it, it just feels like such a waste of opportunity. What's your green light this week, Jamie?
Okay, I have two. And listen, guys, it's going to sound like I'm jumping on a bandwagon because it's Emily Henry, but I've already greenlit two of her books. And the one that's coming out this week is, I'm going to be as bold to say, the best one of all the ones she's written. And it's called Funny Story. I loved Beach Read and Book Lovers. People we meet on vacation and Happy Place are fine, but they're not amazing. But this one, y'all, this one, it's everything. The chemistry in this book is so good. This is the story of Daphne, who is engaged to Peter, and she always loves how he tells the story of how they met in a park on a blustery day, and how they fell in love, and how they moved back to his hometown to begin their life together. And then things went awry because he decided, this is not a spoiler because it's on the back of the book, he was in love with his childhood best friend, which if your person has a childhood best friend of the opposite sex and they are straight, don't do it. Don't do it. That's always a mistake. Okay. And so now we have to have a new story, right? A new funny story. And that is how this book explodes. I'm not going to tell you any more about it because the chemistry with the main characters who are in this is a tip of notch. We got forced proximity. We got opposites attract. It's very New Girl coded. So if you are a Jess and Nick fan, you're going to love this. Like, I love this. I think this book is less literary than Emily Henry's other books, but in the best way, because again, the chemistry is off the charts. This one's, it's a keeper for sure. This is the book you're looking for this spring and summer. And then my other green light is a TV show called Big Mood. It is on Tubi of all places. I actually watched it because it came out in the UK last month and I was like, I'm not waiting, because it stars Nicola Coughlan, who is Lady Whistledown on Bridgerton. And so this is a kind of dark, I would loosely use comedy. I think it's a dark dramedy. It stars Nicola Coughlan and Lydia West, who I loved in It's a Sin, which was a great series. It's the story of Maggie and Eddie, who have been best friends for a decade, but can their friendship survive in a landscape of increased work, life, and mental health pressures? It is darkly absurd. Maggie in the show is bipolar, and she has decided to come off her meds because it is limiting her ability as a playwright, and hijinks ensue. Nicola is, and I'm biased, I love Nicola Coughlan. She's one of the few celebrities I follow on Instagram. I love her. I loved her in Dairy Girls. I obviously love her in Bridgerton. I loved her in this. She shines. She shines. It is high highs, low lows. One of my favorite episodes is where they have a birthday party that's Love Actually themed, and everyone comes as a different character from Love Actually, including the porn stars. It's magical. It's so good. This is if you like Broad City. It's got Broad City vibes because of the friendship. It's also got This Way Up, if you've watched it. First season Fleabag vibes, first season, not second season. And then happy endings if it was twisty and dark. It is very good. It's free to watch on Tubi. I highly recommend it.
My green light this week is book. It is called The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. The premise, the plot is essentially when Lauren, our main character, returns home to her flat. returns home to her flat in London late one night. She is greeted at the door by her husband, Michael. There's only one problem, though, Jamie. She's not married. Okay? She's never seen this man before in her life. But according to her friends, her much improved decor and the photos on her phone, they've been together for years. As Lauren tries to figure out what's going on and how she could be married to someone she can't remember meeting, her husband goes to the attic to change a light bulb, and he disappears. In his place, a new man emerges, and a new, slightly altered life reforms around her. Hijinks ensue from there. I found this to be such an interesting and unique premise. I think, as much as I've had alternate timeline and like life fatigue, this was a way to do it in a very clever way. Because it's very, I guess micro would be the word, instead of like, and then that meant that baby Hitler was dead. You know,
it's
like, we're just like, a lady got too many husbands. That's all you got to worry about. You don't have to worry about if Lucky Charms got invented. You just got to worry about this lady and her freaking husbands. I found this to be like a much, if you've read The Midnight Library, I think, I think I greenlit that. That was kind of sad. It was kind of a downer. Yeah. This is way more bubbly. This is light. Oh. This is easy breezy. There's some serious stuff. But I think like it's a very interesting meditation on love, on marriage, on partnership, on soulmates, and on like, does true love exist or do you make it? Or is it just, you know, moment to moment, random coincidences happen, and then like you put a life together, and that's essentially your life. I found it to be really interesting, really resting. I think I got through it in like a day and a half. So I highly recommend The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. Yeah, very good stuff. Okay, that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. We recommend every time you're doing shopping on Amazon, make sure you go to amazon.com/shop/thepodcast first. So you purchase our affiliate link. If you're purchasing this link, this week was Jamie. This is a Whole Foods Market French baguette.
Okay, this is one of the items that has maybe one of the lower reviews we've seen scores. It's 4.3. So people are hesitant about this baguette. But I'll tell you, let me read you the 5-star review that counts the most. And that's from Dave, who said, it's an excellent bread for a wide variety of uses, including but not limited to 1, whacking your children when they're trying to eat ice cream for breakfast. 2, charcuterie board accompaniment. 3, showing off your juggling skills. 4, bruschetta. 5, the best homemade croutons you'll ever make.
That's what your boy uses with his quarantine
tons. Is that what you use, a French baguette?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, pro tip. We'll put, Knox has a recipe for croutons. We'll include them in the show notes.
Hell no, we won't. That's proprietary, dog. I'm in discussions with like Rachel Ray. She reached out. She's like, $1 million for the quarantine times recipe. I'm like, sorry, Rachel. Like, I got stuff I'm doing. No,
Rachel Ray, dead or alive? I feel like you don't know.
Is she dead? Man, no, she's dead. It's going to be embarrassing. No, it's AI Rachel Ray.
No. All right, you guys. Don't forget, if you would like to find out what to buy for the graduate you love and you want our tips and advice that is both good and bad, you can head to knoxandjamie.com/grad. The link is in the show notes to sign up. It's free to read and enjoy. I'm Jamie Golden. You can find me on the internet at Jamie B. Golden.
Is Rachel Ray I? That would have been, the funnier joke that I missed. Erin, she alive? Did you look?
She's alive.
Oh, shit. Did you look, though? You just know that.
She did look. She just knows.
I just feel like I know.
I'm so done with y'all. Like, get out of my face, please.
I just feel like I know. Not OJ Simpson, but I do feel like other people I know, if they're alive or not. They're vibes.
I'm not Scott. You can find me on the socials at Scott. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.